It's good to see everybody here this evening. Hope everybody has had a good day today. It's been beautiful out there. We were talking this morning about the idea, the principle that when we need help, Jesus is going to be able to do that for us. Matter of fact, he invites us to do that. And it's one of those things that we talk about, we know the principle, I think, okay, but I'm not really sure that we understand fully what that means as far as the service. I know I don't. Maybe somebody else should be up here preaching that understands it better, but I do think it does at the very least mean this. He gives us what we need to serve him, just like any master would give a servant all the tools that were needed to do the task that he was called to do. But I think it's really important for us to understand that when we've done everything we can for something that is God's will, he will take care of the rest. And so when we read in Matthew 11:28, this was our text for this morning. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. When we read that from Christ, we understand that he is going to ease our burden. He's going to make it not easy, but he's going to make it bearable. As a matter of fact, when you think about life, there's not too many things in life that we really enjoy that are easy, are there? One of the things when we go on our teen trip, we'll take, oh, I don't know, 2, 3, sometimes 4 mile hike to get up somewhere that has a view. And then as we look down on that view, it's just all the more beautiful because we have expended some effort to get there. And for those who don't expend the effort, they don't get the view. And so that we understand that in some of these areas of life. But I think one of the most important things to understand in Matthew 11:28, he is not promising us welfare. He is not promising to take care of everything that we can take care of rightfully ourselves. He's promising to trade our burdens, the things that we cannot handle for the things that he wants us to do and that we can handle. And that's why he does talk about the fact that he does have a yoke and he does have a burden, but the yoke is easy and the burden is light. There's another part of that I think is important, and that is that we need to help each other with one another's burdens. Not talking about helping somebody in an area that they need to be taken care of themselves, but talking about those areas where somebody genuinely needs the help and we can supply that help. Galatians 6 verse 2 commands us to carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. I'm always interested to hear people talk about the New Testament as if there's no law in the New Testament. They'll read passages that talk about the fact that we're under grace and not under law, and they will misunderstand that term law, which is talking about the Old Testament law, the law of that was given by Moses, for the idea that somehow we no longer have law, but that grace can somehow be in place of obedience. Grace is always meant to go hand in hand with obedience, and part of our obedience is to carry each other's burdens, because we're going to come across people who need help that cannot do it on their own. Matthew chapter 14 verse 15 is the next passage I want to look at, and really from this perspective of there are some things that we just cannot do. And once we get to that point, then Jesus is going to supply the rest. God is going to supply the rest. But in fact, Jesus is the one that's physically present here. And in Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 15, we come across a passage that's very familiar to us. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place. It's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat." And that's where the apostles answered, "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Well, here is an important principle. They still needed to use the 5 loaves of bread and the 2 fish. Jesus could take what they had and he could supply the rest. Now, obviously, unless the loaves and the fish are very, very large, you cannot feed 5,000 people with them. So we're going to have a miracle that occurs here. But Jesus is going to expect the people who are there to do what they can. And then he'll supply what's necessary after that. So in verse 18, after they had told him what they had, Jesus said, "Bring them here to me." And he directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. The disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. So there was significantly over 5,000 people that Jesus was able to fill the gap in between 5 loaves and two fish and be able to feed that many people. And I think if we can keep this in mind when we are seeking to serve God, it's going to make it a lot easier for us. Because sometimes we will look at the task at hand and we'll just think it's overwhelming. There's no way I can do this with what I have, whether we're talking about our time or our money or our talents or some other kind of resources. We will look at something and we'll realize that on our own, the task is too much. But God has never asked us to do everything. He's only asked us to do everything we can. And once we've done that, if it's something that he wants done, he'll take care of the rest. In Mark chapter 4 and verse 35, we have a series, the beginning of a series of events that we can see that Jesus will literally take care of people in circumstances where nobody else can take care of. Actually, I want to start in Mark chapter 5 and verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When Jesus saw him from a distance, he ran and fell to his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High?" "Swear to God that you will not torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. The next passage we want to look on this, just kind of dropping down just a little bit to verse 18. It says, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis, 10 cities, how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Well, we read a lot about demon possession in the New Testament, but this particular passage shows us the most extreme demon possession that we're ever told about. This man is inhabited with so many demons that they call him Legion. Now, a legion is several thousand soldiers. We don't know if there were several thousand demons within this man, but we do know it was severe. We also know that the man was, because of this demon possession, was not restrainable. And people had tried. They had bound him with irons. They had done everything they could. And he still could not be restrained. And so here he is in the graveyard, running through the graveyard, and just, no doubt, scaring everybody half to death. He's without hope. Men have tried to help him. At least to their credit, they didn't try to kill him. If they did, they weren't successful at it. But you just think about this hopeless situation. Jesus could help. Have you ever seen anybody that was just in such bad shape that you just thought there is no coming out of this? I've noted in the last several years, as the drugs have become more and more prevalent, how difficult it is for people to get off of methamphetamines or off of crack cocaine. As a matter of fact, I'm trying to think if I've ever seen anybody successfully come out of something like that. But the point is, they could if they would turn to Christ and do everything they could and let God and Christ do the rest. It doesn't matter what you're going through, if you will turn your life over to Christ and do what you can, everything else will be taken care of by God. That doesn't mean you're not going to go back and forth. That doesn't mean you're not going to have struggles, and it doesn't mean it's not going to be hard, maybe harder than anything you've ever done before. But here is a man, I want to say again, who is completely without hope. And when nobody else could take care of that for him, including himself, Jesus could. Jesus supplied the rest, so much so that this man was able to go from a completely wild and uncontrolled state to where he was dressed and in his right mind and ready to serve Jesus. And maybe this is one of the most important lessons from this. A lot of times when people are going through difficult times, they become desperate. They also become sincere. They sincerely are turning to God for help, to Christ for help, and they'll want that help. But it's amazing how often somebody will get that help and they're able to be rescued from the situation they're in, and then they don't follow God and Christ after that. They'll just go back to doing whatever they want to do, whether it's going back into a particular sin or whether it's going into something else. It's important for us to understand that there will be times of desperation in our lives that we just think are beyond anything that we can handle on our own. But it's also important for us to be committed to the idea of serving and following God and serving and following Christ once we get out of this situation to where we can do it with more time and more effort. We need to serve them as best we can for the situation once we catch ourselves and start turning. But we also need to be absolutely committed to turning and following God with all of our heart. This next passage, starting in verse 21 of Mark, actually has two separate instances just kind of interwoven. But starting in verse 21 of Mark 5, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers named Jairus came to him. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. Imagine everybody here has that's old enough has either had a child that is very sick or has had somebody that they know that has a child that's very sick. And you know how helpless that situation is. Matter of fact, I imagine there's probably not too many parents here who watching their children going through what they're going at a very difficult stage wouldn't trade spots with them just so that they could take care of that for their child. But we can't do that. And so we feel very helpless at times, especially when we have sought out all the help we possibly can and they're still not getting any better. Jairus had to have been absolutely desperate, and now he comes into contact with Christ and he realizes he has this moment to get Christ to entreat for him. And he knows by faith that Christ is able to do this. And so what an incredible opportunity he has. It's one of the rare times in the history of mankind that people could literally go to a representative of God, the Son of God, and ask for help knowing he was able to do that. But he gets interrupted. As Jesus is going back to take care of his little girl, there's an interruption. It says in verse 25, a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Now, we can relate to this in modern times, can't we? Suffering a great deal under the care of many doctors. There are times when doctors just can't take care of that which ails us, or at least they can't take care of it as quick as we would like them to. And here was a woman who was desperate. The disease she had or the illness that she had was so severe that it just consumed her. Some of y'all have no doubt known people or have been through things like that. And you know that there are times where you're going through something and you cannot even focus on anything else. Your attention is just on this because that's all you can do. And so now she has an opportunity. She's in the presence of Jesus, the healer. And so in verse 27, it says, when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Imagine what a glorious moment that must have been for her. A dozen years, spent every dime she had, and I'm sure if she'd have had more, she'd have spent it too. Going to see all sorts of doctors and no help. And now all of a sudden she touches just the garment of Christ and she feels free from her illness. Well, in verse 20 or 30, it says, at once Jesus realized the power had gone out from him. He turned around to the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. I cannot imagine a moment like that where you are just so desperate. Everything you have tried hasn't worked. And then all of a sudden you're healed and you know you're healed. You feel different. And the idea here once again is, even when men have done everything they can to try and ease some burden, there will be times that men cannot do that. But God can, and Christ can. Now, we know that it is not His plan to heal every ailment and to solve every problem while we walk on this physical planet. If He did, people would become followers of Christ for the wrong reason. They'd be coming for the goodies or for whatever it was. You know, this crowd was certainly doing that, but this proved to everybody that this man whom they called Jesus really was the Son of God. And so they could listen to what he had to say. But again, this was an instance when nobody could take care of what she needed. Christ could. Now, we still have Jairus, don't we? I imagine Jairus is getting a little bit nervous because it's now taking Jesus a little bit longer. He's been detained. And you know how it is. When you want help for your loved ones, you want it right then. Well, at that moment, it says, while Jesus was still speaking in verse 35, some men from the house of Jairus came to the synagogue ruler and said, your daughter is dead. I just can't imagine that. I know it happens from time to time, but I just can't imagine that. Even knowing that if you have a child that dies, that they are going, the rest of their existence is going to be nothing but good. If they have not yet reached whatever age that for them that God has decided is their age of accountability, if sin has not been reckoned against them, and small children would certainly fall into that category, and you know they're okay, this separation is just terrible. I cannot imagine what this man felt when he heard the words, your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore? But before he could suffer unbearable anguish, Jesus immediately told the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." He didn't let anyone follow him in except for Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when they came to the home of the synagogue ruler, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. Now, I doubt very seriously if this was a laugh of humor. I imagine this was a laugh of derision, as if he didn't know what he was talking about. Well, he put them all out, and he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and walked around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this, and he told them to give her something to eat. Can you imagine? You've lost your child and now you're reunited. They were dead and now they're alive again. And again, we come to this fact that when we have done everything that we can and we can honestly, sincerely, physically do nothing more, God can take care of the rest. Christ can take care of the rest. Now, we know that he does not choose to do that type of miracle anymore. This was a special time. This was when he was proving the word. This was when he was doing everything he could to show that he was the Son of God. I often wonder if the reason that Jesus was so adamant within the Garden of Eden when he was praying and wanting this cup to pass from him, if it was because he still wanted to help people, at least in part. There's no telling exactly what all was going on. Surely the separation from God, because he knew God was going to forsake him because of our sins, had to be in it as well. But it's just fascinating to me to see the love and the compassion that Christ has for us. But even if we should lose a child here on earth, we have that opportunity to be reunited with them again. Or anybody else, we have that opportunity to be reunited with them again if we will just be faithful to God, because God will surely be faithful to us. I think it is absolutely amazing to witness the love and the compassion of God in Christ as we look at people with struggles that are beyond what they can reasonably take care of. And then God supplies the rest. Christ supplies the rest. He'll do that for us too. Maybe not so much in the miraculous physical manner that he used to do. I think the time of miracles is over. I don't believe the time of God's intervention is over. Otherwise, we wouldn't be commanded to pray, would we? God still intervenes. It's just different than those instantaneous miracles that were done before. But we have this promise that if we will bring people to Jesus, that Jesus will take care of everything that we cannot supply. And may I also say that we have that command to bring people to Jesus. Mark 16, verses 15 and 16. He said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the good news to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned." Our duty is still to this day the same as it was for these people back then, to bring people to Jesus. And he, after we've done everything we can, will take care of everything else. And isn't it marvelous to serve such a Savior as that? Invitation's open. If anyone needs to respond to the gospel's call, we'd encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.